All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest is 16-year NHL veteran goalie and media personality, Marty Biron. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. Another episode of Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorelia?
Not a whole lot. It's a kick-ass jersey.
What's up? Oh, what, this whole thing? As yeah. Loops would say, Joffrey Loophole.
Nasty Knuckles selects.
Oh, wow. You know how it goes. Now, we have Elvis's team. We are in a tournament, and they wanted to be sponsored by Nasty Knuckles. And we've had a few other requests for the same things, but with a little different color.
Yeah, I love it. It's a good combo.
I had to make myself one, even though I don't think they'll let me play with the six-year-olds. I would be sick, though.
Squeeze in nicely there, probably.
You know? I would probably get a couple G notes. Yeah. But if you notice, I had to, throw the C on. But the you know what's? I just did it like for fun. Like obviously, I've never been a captain of a hockey team, but I'm like now I have the jerseys. But Elvis got pissed off. I pulled them all out, checking the spellings and everything. You know, like I'm assistant coach / equipment guy.
Oh yeah,
for our team.
Jackie Moon.
Yeah. I mean, I love GM, Jackie Moon. I just need a fro. Manager. I'm letting her buck right now though. I'm not messing with it. And the girls put the sun in it, so it's nice and orange. It's orange. It's really good
we
look.
Show the
it's
folks real, what you're talking about.
No, we're not showing the folks right now. But no. So anyway, went with the jurors and boys are excited. Yeah, nice to sponsor it and a team, and hopefully they do well, man.
Yeah,
had a good practice last night. Elvie made a glove save. One little thing about my son. Sorry. Makes a glove save and throws it to the side. He says, "Get that shit out of here." I said, yo. He's like, "You say that when you block my shot in basketball." I'm like, you shouldn't be saying it, bro. And he's like, I'm sorry. Classic. I'm sorry.
He's feeling it.
He was feeling it yesterday. He was feeling it. But anyway, that's what this is all about.
Yeah, it looks rad. Thanks, good design, Nast.
Oh,
your wheelhouse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the colors too, except I'm not a big UNC fan, as everyone knows, but I just love blues. So
yeah, I think the white and black kind of separates it. And
yeah, yeah, almost a main yeah. Bears feel to it. But anyway, what do you got going on, Riggs?
Yeah, you know, just recovering from the weekend, overeating undersleeping.
I think people saw the little thing I put up. We're trying to wish a happy 4th of July to everyone. I'm like, yo, Riggs, right? Turn around.
Didn't even make it to the fireworks.
You didn't see the fireworks. You didn't. I don't think you made it to 7:10 p.m. You know, it doesn't get dark now. We knew you weren't going to make the fireworks.
No,
it's all right.
No, I was enjoying the 90 degree day and the sun and a little peace and quiet. So
I'm wondering if you were enjoying
happy poo.
I'm wondering if you were enjoying something else as well. The way you look.
Oh, definitely a little hurt. Yeah, I was definitely. I was definitely relaxed.
You look. I was thinking you were on Pluto. You know, just thinking about things. But anyway, no, I'm kidding.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Evolved into a nap and peace and quiet. So,
gosh,
it was well deserved.
It was well earned.
Right on. What's going on game five here, Nast?
Yeah.
Give us your predictions.
Yes. Well, unlike you, who's Montreal, I'm going with Tampa. I think Tampa's going to finish it out tonight. I know you're big on Montreal, what we were just talking about. And, you know, you're really feeling the Habs, but with that Frenchness in you, I get it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with the Lightning. I think they finish it off tonight. I will say, I actually hope they don't, because I want more hockey, obviously, and I'd like to see a couple more games. I think it gets more interesting if they're able to pull one out. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh boy. But I'll tell you what, man, the Lightning have not lost consecutive games in the playoffs in 2 years, bro. 14-0. That's
a crazy stat.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
If you're a betting man, I would say I would go with Tampa. But I mean, anything can happen, right?
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. Tampa's going to win tonight. I was just rooting for Montreal just to inject some spirit back into the Canadian culture. but I was just, being realistic, I mean, Tampa's going to win. There's no question.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm kidding. They're too. The better team. You definitely said Lightning, but I just wanted to.
Yeah. Our boy Patty Maroon. That'd be amazing story. Just keep building off that.
When he tied that game up, everybody talks about how slow he is. If you watch that goal, man, he beat everyone down the ice, man.
Yeah, he did.
He kept those big legs. The big rig, that's an 18-wheeler coming at you, man.
Yep, and that was all coaching from back in the Phantoms. Keep those feet moving, Patty.
Yeah.
Keep those feet moving.
See? It's too bad you sent him home, though, for fuck's sake. Right?
Kick him off the team. And,
the highest scoring guy. Let's get rid of him.
Oh, yeah. He goes on to win. Two, possibly three. Yeah.
In a row. But what a play. You know, that was a great pass, but him going to the net and burying it. I'm like, this is over. They might even score before they get to overtime at that point. I thought, but then a hell of a play. Josh Anderson. One-handed. When he threw that, forget who was on his back.
It was Caulfield, right?
He threw. Yeah, the D-man was on him.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Hugging him, and he one-handed it to the net. Caulfield got a piece of it, and then he jumped back. You know, a lot of times guys will just keep going the other way, but he jumped back, and hell of a play, hell of a goal. So they live another day.
Yeah, they're set up to win, though, you know, like. Kucherov, I mean, what an amazing story he is, too. I mean, to not play the regular season and to perform at that level is hard to believe. Really.
You're right. It's someone said, I heard someone say on TV, you know, or maybe it could have been our buddy Witt. Someone said, anyway, that, you know, he didn't play all year and then. And someone came back with, well, he practiced for a month with the best team in the world. So maybe, but still, we all know practice and games is different.
Oh, yeah.
Even the first game of the playoffs, what do you have, 4 points that night or something? Three or four points. He just made it look like, you know, oh, okay, I'll just jump insane. In here on Nasty's, on Natty Light,
yeah,
on
our
men's league team, and just jump in and play, and made it, he almost made it, I know it's not that easy, obviously, but he sure as hell made it look that way.
Yeah, and the pace from, like, you know, regular season to playoffs is a big difference to miss that whole progression and jump right in to play at that level is it's pretty remarkable, honestly, and leading the playoffs in points is...
Yeah, and he's not a huge guy either. No. Obviously, I've seen him a bunch of times, but he doesn't play soft. I mean, he takes his lumps. He gets in there, but man, the hands and oh god,
yeah,
he's a dirty player. That's for sure, man.
Can't teach that. Mm-mm. That is
only if you come to Nasty Skills Camp. But
that is
I'll chop that thing right up for you.
Yeah, something special. All right, Nas, let's jump into episode 31 with Marty Marr, Marty Biron, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but also America's top-rated sportsbook. I love using DraftKings Sportsbook. It is easy to navigate, has plenty of instructions for new bettors, and nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Listen to this great offer. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in site credits. That's right. Pick any basketball team that is still in contention, bet $1, and if that team wins, you win $100 in site credits. Don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code Knuckles when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code Knuckles for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, and PA only. New customers only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Let's go.
Knuckles, the Suns, game two.
Beauty.
Putting it out there for you.
Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
I'm Derek Settlemyer, and this week we're so happy to have our good friend, former goaltender here in Philadelphia, a fan favorite, number 43, Marty Marr, Mart Biron. What's up, brother?
I'm so happy to see you guys. I was so happy to run into you at the golf tournament, Riles, and you look good, man, and Nasty. It's been a while. I think last time I saw you was at the alumni camp, but a couple of years, but I can't wait to see you in real life too.
Yeah, I know. It'd be nice. I was just saying, I wished if I'd known you were at the golf, I would have come over just to say hello and talk to you, buddy. Missed you, man.
It would have been good. And you know what's so funny is you start to think, like, man, my 2 years, like 2+ years in Philly were 2007-8, 2008-9, right? It's already been 14 years when I came into Philadelphia. Unreal. That's crazy to think.
It really is. It's like you look, it just seems like, oh, a few years ago Marty was here.
Yeah.
But then it's like, wait a minute. That was actually a while back.
Plus, if you count all the goalies that have been there since I was there, that's way while back.
Hey, bro, a couple years ago, we had 9 in one season. Yeah. So you got, like, that's off the charts, but you're right, man. But it's great to see you. We really appreciate you coming on, man. What are you up to these days, bro?
Busy now because the season's still not over. So I'm doing some playoff coverage a little bit here and there, radio and TV and whatnot. You know, mostly TV in Canada. I've got a radio show here in Buffalo that I do a couple times a week. It's a radio show with Andrew Peters and Craig Rivet. They go on full 5 days from 10 to noon. But I do a couple of days a week just to keep them in the straight and narrow. Like they go out in these sideways roads all the time. And I come on and I send them back the right direction. So that's good. And during the year, I do a lot of Sabres TV. So I'm a studio guy. So kind of like what Hartnell does with the Flyers and, you know, those guys. So I do that here in Buffalo. So last year did, you know, all the games and it gets busy. And I chase my four kids around. I was telling the guys I played golf with on Monday a funny story about my kid. Like Jacob was probably 4 years old. He's born in 04, right? So he's 4 years old walking around the locker room. And he's out there. He goes, hey, Carter, nice goal today, Carter. Hey, Richards, good job today. And then he goes to Riles. He goes, hey, Cote, why don't you score? Like, you never score. And I'm like, back away from the bulldog over there. Like, come on. So,
well, he's right.
But now he's, he was maybe right, but that's not your job. But anyway, he's now going to be 17 in July.
Oh my God.
And my girls are 15, 13, and 11. So it's busy. It's really busy.
Wow.
And you want to hear something? And I was just going to say that makes me really feel old because I remember the little fella. And you know, it's funny when I think about you, I'm like, oh yeah, your boy, but he's not four anymore. Like, I probably wouldn't even recognize him, but,
he's Peyton taller than Bright. Me, Nasty. He's an inch and a half almost taller than me. God. He's a goalie, too.
Yeah, so I remember you telling me
I wasn't able to get him away from playing the position, but yeah, so it's pretty busy. And yeah, I know the curse, right? I mean, I remember Danny Briere telling me a story as one kid said, Dad, I want to be a goalie. So Danny said, let's go to the basement. Let's see if you like it. And he goes, I didn't want him to be a goalie, so I just shot pucks as hard as I could. And then I scored like 100 goals. And he says, yeah, I don't want to be a goalie anymore. So yeah, right. That's the way to do it.
Well, you know what? You know what's funny? You say that, Marty. A couple of years ago, Elvis, you know, a lot of kids just like the gear. They think it's cool. Yeah. They want to try it. Elvis is playing goalie now as well. And he was just goofing off with it a couple of years ago. He was only four. And Hexie, I showed Hexie a little video. He was the GM of the Flyers. And he goes, Deke. He calls me Deke. He's like, get him out of there. I said, listen to you. You're a goalie. He goes, no. I gave my card away. I'm not a goalie. I'm like, Hexie, he goes, those guys are nuts. I said, coming from the number one nut that played the position, maybe Billy Smith. It's a toss up. But anyway, he goes, I'll tell you what you do, Deke. He goes, get him in there and shoot some balls, shoot those little orange hockey balls at him and hit him right in the forehead. He'll never play again. I said, Hexie, he's four. And he goes, yeah. And he'll remember and he will not play again.
He didn't hit him hard enough because he's still in the pipes.
Yeah, right. But to your other point, they're 17 years old. My daughters are 23 and 21.
I know. I used to, you know, they were. Yeah, they were, you know, 7, 8 at the time, right? Yeah. It's crazy to think. And I look back at those 2 years in Philly, especially when the playoffs come around. That was my only time I got to play playoff hockey for me as a number one goaltender.
Yeah.
Those 2 years, the first year going to the conference finals, you know, Montreal now is in the Stanley Cup final, but I'm like, man, Montreal was so fun. We beat Montreal in the second round in 08, right? And we used to go on the patios on the off days and like, it was fun. The building in Philly was fun. So whenever playoffs come around, whenever, you know, I cover a game where the Sabres play the Flyers or I'm watching the Flyers on TV, like all these memories come back and the guys that I played with. And it's definitely a lot of good memories.
We talked about that with a few guys that run you're talking about because the year before, we got you at the deadline. I remember the trade and we were able to get you, which was awesome. And then a few pieces and then we get Kimo and Scotty Hartnell. And next thing you know, we're in a conference final. Unfortunately, that year we had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember Kimo was out. Braden Coburn took a puck to the face. I think Carter broke his foot. I feel like Gags was hurt too, but I mean,
I think Gags had the concussions during the year.
Something, so, yeah. I mean, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda. There's always those things, but it was a great year. And you're right. It was so much fun going from the worst team in Flyers history the year before. But even when you came that year, we started having fun because you could see the, I don't want to say the culture. The culture was never bad. It's just that it was changing. Like
the chemistry was different. Like yeah, I remember Scuddy Upshaw came in from Nashville and then I came in and Kobe came in and there were still some older guys and guys that I knew that I like Jeff Sanderson was there. Like Sandy was not going to stick with the team, but the Sandman, I knew him and he was a great guy.
Yeah.
Right. So it was, and the chemistry was starting to get to really form and build. Yeah. And I mean, Riles, remember like those dinners in Montreal, we would all go out to dinner the night before the game and the team would just stay there forever. Like we would show up at 5-6 o'clock and stay in there until 10:30, 11 when it was like, okay, we got to go to bed. Like we just hung out together. Yeah. It was awesome.
It was an amazing time.
It was a great time. Great time, man.
Hey, Marty, I gotta ask you, since you're doing all the Buffalo stuff now, like what the hell is going on with that organization? You gotta talk. You gotta give me some insight.
I know you gotta be careful.
But there's gotta be something.
I'll tell you this. You know, like the Taryn Kempegula, they have done so much for the city, the Sabres organization, the Bills organization, and they got a recipe that worked with the Bills. Is they tried a few different ways. And they got, and then they got Sean McDermott, who's the coach, and then they got Brendan Bean, who's the general manager, and they really changed the whole attitude of the organization, the whole culture of the organization. And we talked about culture, chemistry. Like they really went after some great quality cultured guys. And it started with some of the veterans, but then they have Josh Allen and they brought in Stephon Diggs, and it really changed the way the team was. So I think the Sabres are trying to do a little bit of the same thing now with building the organization. So they've tried a couple of different general manager and it didn't really work the way they wanted to. They've tried different coaches. It didn't work. And then last summer they said, we need a guy that we trust, somebody that we've known for a while now. And we know that he's going to build that same culture. And Kevin Adams, which I had worked with for many years here with the, we started this Academy of Hockey and it was through the Pegula umbrella, but you know, we developed a lot of young players and we were on the ice and the work ethic and all of that. And that was successful. And then they put the Junior Sabres organization together and that was successful. And it was all Kevin kind of building the pieces. And I think they realized, they said, hey, you know what? We don't have to look too far. This is the guy we totally have confidence in. He's achieved and overachieved and met beyond our expectation every step and every time we've given him a role. And let's take a look at what Kevin can do. And last year, he had some tough decisions to make. You know, firing Ralph Kruger was not easy. And first time general manager, and you got to look somebody in the eye. You got to say, sorry, but you're out, right? That's not easy to do. And he waited until he thought that was the right time. But I think that I've turned that page now and I think they're moving forward. So there's still some questions and you know, what's going to happen with Jai Keuchel and are they trading him or not? And Sam Reinhardt and Rasmus Ristolainen and all of that, right? They just figured out the coach. They announced the coach yesterday and that was great. Don Granato is an unbelievable hockey man. I love him and he did great. So I do believe it's going the right direction, but you know, the fan base in Buffalo and you guys know, like it's very similar to Philadelphia. They're passionate and they love the team. When you don't make the playoffs 10 straight years, I mean, that weighs on you. So I think Kevin Adams, what he's going to do right now. If he'd have picked another coach, some people would have loved it. Some people would have criticized it. He does some things. It's always going to be like that until they start winning consistently. Then the fan base is going to be behind him. But I think he's going to do a great job.
Good.
I hope so, man, because you know what? It's a great place with, you know, I'm speaking on like the way I felt every time I go into Buffalo, always a packed house. The fans are passionate. It's always a good game. You know what I mean? Like it's a great hockey place and it sucks seeing everything the way it is right now. You know, like you get a
player. I know, like, I think of you, Nasty, and I think of like all the trainers and equipment guys and athletic trainers and all of that. Like, you know, the guys in Buffalo, like George Babcock's been there forever, right? Yes. And Dave Williams has been there for a long time. And those guys, like, you want the team to do well because they're great people and they work so hard. It's not just the players and the coaches and the fans. It's the behind the scenes. Those guys, like, they deserve it as much as anybody else.
I mean, I'll tell you, you know me, Marty, obviously, Riggs. Like, every year that we wouldn't make the playoffs, I couldn't stand it. Like, it just kills you. I'm not a player, but the reason on that side of things, you're working so hard is you want everything to go be right for you guys to be there to make you comfortable and ready to play. And you want to be in the playoffs. There's nothing like, even though like I wouldn't be playing, being on the bench in the playoffs, it's just like a different animal.
Yeah, it's
just
a different energy.
You know, it's so much fun. It is. It's what you work for and what you guys play for, you know, like,
plus,
so.
Plus the tips are way better when
they are way better. When, that is a good point.
That is the truth.
That is a good point. But I hope they get it turned around, man, because like I said, I'm not just saying that because you're with us, but I do hope that they get it turned around because.
This year was weird. Like the division was weird because Buffalo now was playing with these seven other teams in that division. Right. Yeah. Now next year they move to their regular division. So you've got Toronto, you got Tampa, you got Florida, you got Boston, you got Montreal. I'm like, holy crap, like that is a tough division. Ottawa's better than that they were. So it is a tough division. So I don't know that it's like, oh, playoffs next year. But I think taking a step forward, we haven't seen the team take a step forward in now a few years. And it was always like they're ready for it. Just taking that step forward, it makes my job a lot easier, man. And when we have 82 games to do, and at least there's positive signs and you can talk about certain players. But I mean, they lost 18, I think, in a row this year. Was it 18 or 13 or whatnot?
No, it was 17 or 18.
There was a few overtime and shootout losses in there. Yeah. So it wasn't regulation losses, but I mean, that's hard coming on TV at 7 o'clock the next day for a 7:30 game. And you're like, hey, welcome to Sabres game. No, Sabres are.
Let's get fired up, boys. Big game tonight.
It's not easy.
No, I can imagine. Yeah,
Is it safe to say that Matthias Samuelsson, Shel Samuelsson's son, will make the team next year?
I like him a lot.
Yeah,
man, I was so happy when they called him up. Yeah. Played extremely well. Now he had his ups and downs in his first year in the National Hockey League, but his simple game, I think, is the key for him. He's a big body. He looks like a man. Like we interviewed him and he talks and looks like a man. And he understands the game too. I mean, obviously comes from that family and Shell probably has talked to him about what he needs to do and how he needs to do it. But I would definitely have him in my top six next year. They need some adjustment. Like who knows if Rasmus Ristolainen is going to come back, but what they have right now with Dahlin played so much better in the second half under Granato and he's an unbelievable talent. So if Dahlin plays well, they have a kid named Henry Jokiharju. They got from Chicago in a trade when they traded Alex Nylander. He had a great second half as well. So I'm like, these two are young and really skilled. And that up and down game that you see some of the top defensemen doing right now, they're great. And then you have a guy like Will Borgen. People don't really know him, but he's physical. You got Matthias Samuelsson, who's physical. I think there's a good young mix there, and I want them to have that core of defense for 3, 4, 5 years, and that's going to be really, really good.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm pulling for it, man.
Yeah,
I really am. And like you said, Willie and George and Keith works here, helps take care of the visitors, man. He's a great guy. Like I love those dudes.
I don't know if I could say this story, but you guys probably, George, the trainer in Buffalo, the equipment guy in Buffalo, we went to a baseball game at Citizens Bank Park one year. You know, just, I don't know if it was playoffs or if it was, you know, like the end of the hockey season and the Phillies were starting. Anyway, we show up to a Phillies game and Georgie did something somehow. He got
Imagine that. And, Rouse, he could be a guest on here. Like this guy, there are 1 million stories about Georgie. Anyway,
and all of a sudden we saw like security people running around, right? Have you seen this little guy with glasses, spiked yellow hair? We're like, no. And we didn't even know George was at the game. And we're like, that's George. That's like, that's him. Like, they're looking for him. So.
What the fuck did he do? Do you even know?
I think he jumped over the rail and he was kind of hanging like his feet over the rail and he was like, oh, I'm going to fall. But he pulled himself back up and he was fine. And they were like, no, that's not, you can't do that. I was like, oh my gosh, George. Right. This is the guy that 1 year at Madison Square Garden, the circus was in town and they unloaded the bags. And, you know, Derek would tell you, like, they come in and they unload sometimes at 2-3 in the morning. And he's tired and he looks over and there's one of those little mini bikes, like mini motorbikes, right? And he's like, oh, let me see if this thing starts. So he kickstarts it and then he's riding through Madison Square Garden on this mini bike, right, at 3 a.m.
Robbie, I got to show you a picture of him. Just make it better if you know what he looks like.
He looks like Dennis the Menace a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I've known him. I met him in 1994 and he's had the same spiked hair. He's lost some of it, but it's still spiked.
Yep.
He's just the funniest dude, nicest guy, works his bag off. Great guy. But it's funny, the first time I met him before I knew him, Buffalo came into Philly and I had to travel with the Flyers. So when they came in, he got picked up by another person that was working with us. And that guy didn't give all the supplies that they were supposed to. So I guess Georgie's losing his mind. So I come walking in. It's the first time I ever walked into Hollydale because they were over at a practice rink over in Sewell. And I didn't know George. I think I knew I knew Rip because I'd met Rip the year before at pizza. My man Pizza got some great pizza stories. I'm sure you do too. But anyway, I go walking in and I had my Flyers shirt on, I guess. And George looks at me, doesn't know me. He goes, "Yo, man, what the fuck?" And I'm like, fuck, who is this clown? He's got these big glasses on. His hair is.
He looks like he's 12.
Yeah, he looked like he was fucking. Sick boy. Yeah, like 12 years old, skinny little guy. And I'm like, what? Excuse me? He goes, "Where the fuck are all the toilet? Where's all this and that?" And I'm like, I just got here, man. The other guy was supposed to have everything here. Well, it's not here, man. And I'm like, well, fuck, settle down, buddy. And so we're like face to face. We're getting ready to fight. I don't even know him. So I think Ripper comes in. And he's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!" Like, and he, like, we introduce it. And we kind of start laughing about it. So every time I ever see George, we're always like, and then he pulls it. He had his own jersey. He had a game jersey with it with Babcock on the back. Yeah, and he goes, "Get your jersey. We'll chuck them later." You know, and I'm like, "No, George, I don't want to chuck them, man." But hey, great guy though, just funny.
You've been 0-5, Nass. You've been 0-5.
Oh, dude, I 0-5-1.
0-5-1.
I got a tie. I have one tie.
Who'd you tie?
Some kid in high school. He jumped me though. I should get the win because I got jumped, but. I gave myself a tie because I landed one punch. I couldn't see out of my eye for a week, but it doesn't matter.
It's better than me. I'm 0-1, so I didn't even.
Well,
get
you
a
fought
tie,
Ray. But,
yeah, I know. I fought Ray.
Yeah. I mean, what are you doing, Marty? I think we talked about this before, but what were you doing? Why in the world?
Well, why in the world?
Your reach.
Because
your reach. Right?
Listen,
your reach.
You know, you guys know me. I'll do everything and anything for my team, my teammates. Yeah. Like I'm a part of the boys. And I always dreamed of having a fight. And Rouse, you're going to say, you're nuts. Like, you fought enough to say, like, nobody should ever, like, dream of getting the fight. Like, you know, especially against a really tough guy. But I always thought, like, I had seen Felix Podvin and Ron Extall back in the days. And little Felix Podvin bloodied Ron Extall. And I'm like, that's going to be me one day. I'm going to get a lucky punch. And I'm going to come out on top, right, against a tough guy. So the whole thing happened in Buffalo and Chris Neal hits Chris Drury and, you know, Lindy Ruff puts the tough guys on the ice and Brian Murray puts, you know, Jason Spezza, Danny Eatley and Mike Comrie on the ice. And I'm like, well, this is happening. Like these guys don't know, but it's happening. So the puck drops and I look at Ray at the other end, Ray Emery, and he comes to center ice and we squaring off and I tried to grab him, and I did not grab his arm, and all of a sudden, it's come in from left, right. I'm diving out of the way. He didn't hit me hard or just in the back of the head, and then we fell down, and then when we got back up, we're like, let's do it again, and then all of a sudden, he looked over, and he saw Andrew Peters, and he's like, Marty, I'm done with you. I'm going to fight the big
cup. You're the appetizer.
I was exactly. Very much the undercard.
Hey, credit though for doing it, man.
Yeah, man.
But it was, and then I got kicked out of the game, and then I went to the locker room and ate pizzas and chicken wings.
Oh,
I
mean,
And then you know what's funny is that was my last game in Buffalo.
Oh, like, was it?
A week later, I got traded to Philadelphia. Oh, that was that was my last game in Buffalo.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so
that was a good one.
So at least like I'm 0-1. I always wanted to get another fight so I could get up to 500 1-1, but I never did. So I'd probably be 0-2. The way that at 6 to 170 pounds in the days, I probably would have been 0-2.
Well, that's a great point. Your weight there, Riles. You had a question.
Well, yeah,
Marty Marr.
I was going to ask you when you were drafted in 95, what you weighed in at.
So I probably was about 150 pounds, but on the board when I got drafted, right? You get drafted and they put your name and your bio on the board. It said 6'2", 142. And so there's a clip online on Twitter, on YouTube or something about when I get drafted, and the analyst goes, "Oh, it's 6'2", 142. He's going to have to gain a little bit of weight because you turn him sideways and you can see the net. Like, he doesn't cover a lot of net." But and that summer, Buffalo brought us in to train, right? And they put us in apartments, and I was with guys like Roman Andur, Jean-Luc Grandpierre, Denis Hamel.
Big boys.
We had some big boys, and these guys could eat, right? They could eat, and they're like making like triple parm spaghetti, whatever, right? So I'm eating all kinds of stuff. I probably gained like 10 pounds, 15 pounds that first summer. So I was up to 160, 165. A few years later, yeah, I probably played at about 175. My last couple of years in New York, I was 183, 184. And now I'm like, I got to get myself under 200. I'm 202. And
oh,
you don't look like it.
I'm a skinny fat guy. That's it is. I'm literally a skinny fat guy. But I got to get myself back under, because the suits are starting to get a little tight for TV.
Oh.
Like, you guys don't see it, but that button is going to pop.
It's popping. So. Hey, man, you got to look sharp on there, Marty Marr. You're on big time TV.
I was
telling Riley, was way before I knew you, I'll never forget this, and I think I probably told you this when we finally met, but I was with the Phantoms, and your first year, you were in Rochester, and you guys would go on the ice first, obviously, but it was early, and I just happened to walk out to the bench, look around. I think they had redone part of the building or something. I can't remember why I was so anxious to get out there, but I went out there, and there's this tall kid, looked like he weighed 120 pounds. He's stick handling in his flip flops and his long underwear. And I was like, I was one of the coach's kids or something, you know. So I go down and I said, I think Willie would have
Willie
been
was
there.
The trainer there.
Yeah. So it was Willie. And I said, who's kids out there? And he goes, "That's our starting goalie." And I said, "Fuck off, that's your starting goalie." "See, what's he weigh? 110 pounds? I said, "Fuck." I said, "He's tall." But he goes, no, that's Marty Biron. That's our goalie. And then he gets out. Marty gets out there because he cheated. But if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So my guy's taking up the whole net ring. That is not the guy that was stick handling. He's like, that's him.
My first year in Rochester, we took, you know, like the cuff of a player's glove. We cut it out of the gloves and we sewed it between the elbow and the shoulder. So I had a wing over here over my shoulder. Yeah. And literally, like, pucks would come in, I'd make the save, and the puck would get stopped and stay right between where my numbers is on the sleeve. Like, it gets stuck in my gear. The referees have to come in and pull it out of my jersey because it gets stuck there. I cheated a little bit at the time. Well, remember Dave Dryden was the NHL goalie guy at the time?
Yeah.
He came to Buffalo and told me to take my jersey off during training camp. And he took pictures. And he sent it to the whole league. And basically it was like, this is what not to do. Like, these are illegal. These pants are illegal. I had to shrink my gear. So I had to gain a few pounds after that.
Well, it was funny. I remember the day you showed up, going through your gear, and I'm like, "Oh man, Marty, you need new pants." "Oh no, I've had these, Riles, these pants. You should have seen these things." I was like, "Dude, come on, don't you want new pants?" "No,
I finished my career with those."
I thought you did. I thought you had, because I remember a few times when we would play you guys, I would like sneak in there and have a look. See, I'm like, "He's still got these fucking pants, man."
They were, there was nothing left to them. They were basically a bag of air, but they felt so comfortable. Now, when I retired, I put my gear in the garage, and let's see, 6 months later, right? Like, I have an outdoor garage, so it's kind of like on its own. 6 months later, I'm like, I need gear to go play a game or whatever. I opened it, and then there's like a couple little baby mice that walked out of there, and my pants were all chewed up. I took all the bag and I threw it in the garbage. I was like, the only thing I saved literally are my skates, because I played my whole career with those skates. So I saved my skates. I still have them. I don't wear them anymore, but I got rid of everything else. It was all chewed through. You know how it is.
Listen, you could be down at the other end of the hallway, Riles, and you know this, and you hear, this guy put two rolls of tape, plastic tape around his ankles. Francis Lessard, it must be a French thing, right? Because Frankie did the same damn thing. But it took Marty a half hour to get undressed afterwards just to get the tape off. Remember the big ball? Oh, my God. I was like, oh, my God. Dude, why don't you just try new skates? These are like slippers.
Talk about weight and stuff. Also, we were talking during the golf tournament, and then I don't know if I saw you, and the guys are like, who's that? I'm like, oh, that's Riley Cote. And I'm like, he looks great, looks fit and all of that. And then they pulled a picture of you when you were with the Phantoms and you won the Calder Cup. You were like, what did you weigh like your first when you guys won the Calder Cup with the Phantoms? You had to be like 25 pounds.
Yeah, 215, 220, somewhere in there. Yeah. So we kind of flip flopped Marty Marr. You know, I'm like a buck 80, and you're in the 200s.
Marty, he eats like a damn bird. He eats like kale and
well, yeah,
like
but that's the healthy
leaves,
stuff, and that's what we should be
from
doing.
The yard. Eats leaves from the yard and berries he sees. He'll just pick them and eat them.
Did you like? And I know, like for me, it was hard to put on weight, and just because of how I was. But like you were so, I remember still coming into the locker room my first time, and you'd walk around and you were like tatted up, and you were huge, and I was like, oh boy, this guy is like, I don't want to get on his bad side. So like,
I was too big.
Well, I don't want to say you're fat. You were massive. Like you were a thick human being. Big. But did you like? Was it easy for you to put on that muscle weight, or was it hard?
Yeah, you take a needle and you.
It certainly required a lot of work between a lot of heavy lifting, which wasn't very functional as a hockey player, and then a lot of eating, man. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many calories a day I was eating, but it was just like more. And I'm fighting guys like, Petey and Brash and LaRock and these guys. I mean, in my mind, I just felt like I had to be like this certain size. And, I'm not sure if it necessarily helped me as a fighter or a hockey player, but, in my mind, it is what I had to do. So, yeah. One of those things, man. It was old school, a little bit old school still back then. There was still a bunch of guys floating around.
Yep.
I didn't know any better, man. I was just trying to, live my childhood dream and play and, do the whole thing the old fashioned way. But I look back and, man, geez, I'm like, I was a fat ass. My face was like this, my neck.
You say that all the time, but like, you didn't look fat, dude.
No.
Like, you were like,
Homer called me fat one day.
Yeah, one time in the off season, he walked in and I was changing after I'd worked out, and he's like, oh, Riley, you're looking a little fat. And I always thought he was joking until Lavi, Johnny got fired, and Lavi came in, and then I had like a heart to heart with Lavi about becoming lean, and I'm like, am I not lean? And I'm like,
you're also fighting guys that weigh LaRock that weighs 265.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fight him at 190, man. Like,
no, my face.
Those tough guys were big back then. They were huge.
Yeah.
God.
Hey, Marty, I was going to ask you. I don't know if you remember this. It was actually like my first 8 games with the Flyers that I called up from the Phantoms. And it was the last game of the season, and we were playing Buffalo.
Yep.
At Buffalo, I line up with Petey. It was like an NBC game or whatever. And I'm like, Petey, man, like, you got to give me one. I thought, Petey for sure. He's gamer with the whole bit. He's like, yeah, sure. And puck drops. And I just yard sail the one glove, yard sail the other glove, and then Petey just disappears on me. And I'm just like there standing there with my gloves on, like picking my shit up. I'm like, what the fuck? I think we're going to the playoffs then. I think it was last time.
They had won the President's Trophy. I know Petey really well. I talk to him almost every day,
of course,
and we work together, right? So, but I'll tell him, like, hey, Riles still remember that time where you like totally like stood him up on the ice. But so here's what happened. Like, Petey is that type of guy where he was told, and like some of the top guys weren't playing, like, you're going to get a chance to play 12, 13, 14 minutes. Like, yeah, don't mess it up. So he's like, I'm not missing this. This is my one time to play like over 10 minutes, right? But I do remember we beat them that day. So it worked out to our advantage that Petey was on the ice for 12 minutes.
He was still on the ice that long.
We took advantage of that, right? So that's good.
It was just a selfish perspective, you know, for me. It was just like, I just wanted to get, I just wanted to get a tilt at home, you know, against a legitimate tough guy, you know, and it was just one of those things. But it was just funny. It was etched in my memory because I was just like, I don't even know how I didn't get an unsportsmanlike penalty for it. It was just the yard sale that I
around trying to get your stuff. Like,
you know, it's funny.
I know that that year, so I get traded to Philly. You guys are in Long Island playing the Islanders, but you're going to Boston. So I went straight to Boston. And so the next day we play Boston. So I'm like, hey, I'm a new guy, so I got to put money on the board, right? My first game. So I'm looking around. I think I put like $1,500 on the board or whatnot for the win. Scotty Upshaw does the Forsberg one hand in overtime on Tim Thomas in Boston. Like, he came in on the breakaway, one hander.
That's right.
And scored. So I'm like, there goes $1,500. Like, write the check. There you go. Go to Philly. Well, now it's the first game at home, right? So $1,500 on the board. Boom. We win that game too. And then last game of the season, it's your former team. So I'm like, $1,500 on the board. Boom. We won again. So
$4,500 later.
Right. It's like, man, like, if I put $1,500 on every time, like, we're going to win, but I won't have any money left. So
that's classic. My God.
That's great. I didn't even think about that. That's awesome.
I think I may have put a little bit for the trainers the last time because I'm like, you guys are not getting all my money. Somebody else is getting some, but that's just the way it is.
That's awesome. I appreciate it, Martin.
Yeah, right.
We all
get some good times with that money, Marty. Some good parties.
A couple of parties. And it's funny enough, I was talking to some of the alumni, like LeClaire and Recky were there at the golf tournament, and they're like, oh, I remember that one year-end party in Atlantic City. And I thought, like, that was new. When I got to Philly, the guys are like, we're going to Atlantic City. No, they used to do that all the time. Like, every generation of Flyers at the end of the year head down to Atlantic City and let's have a party, right? So that's where all the money went to. And we had some good ones, that's for sure.
Yeah, there were some good nights there, that's for sure, man. I found some pictures, Marty. I may have sent a couple of them to you from Claude Giroux's rookie party. What a crew we had there. It was in Miami, and I've got a great picture of you.
Yeah.
Of you and Aaron Asham.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I remember that.
And
one.
Unfortunately, Ash doesn't have a shirt on.
It happened a lot with Ash. The shirt came off pretty easily. Now you talk about, so I don't know if we got to, but Claude Giroux may have had the worst first NHL road trip in the history of the league.
Oh, I remember that.
We went, Chicago, Columbus, and then, Vancouver, and then Anaheim. Yeah. That whole road trip could have been personally the worst NHL road trip in the history of the league.
But he
recovered.
He recovered. He did. Oh, man. He did have a tough few days there.
I had a tough day a few days, too, because me and Briere got called in from Johnny Stevens' little office in Anaheim, maybe not even Anaheim, before that. And they're like, okay, you guys need to take care of G. He's a young guy. It's his first time on the road. Like, you need to show him the ropes and make sure he gets to the meetings on time and the buses and all of that. We're like, don't worry. It's not going to happen again. And sure enough, it's New Year's Eve and it's in Anaheim. And, you know, we decide to go out and, you know, the shit hit the fan, literally. Me and Danny got in trouble the next day again. Like, all because of G. I never got in trouble, but because of G, I got in trouble. So
he owes you, man.
He owes me big time.
We tried to, we won't tell what happened. It wasn't even that bad. It's actually funny, but we had him on and he was just like, let's not talk about that. So. I said, dude, that's a hilarious story. But anyway, we'll keep them guessing.
And nothing bad happened.
Oh, that's what I mean. It wasn't anything bad.
And somehow Corey Perry got involved into that whole conversation as well.
Did.
And the guy's still playing. I can't believe it. But anyway.
He's still playing. That's right.
Maybe for like, maybe if we ever like, when G's done playing, and
yeah,
we should do a roast, and then we can do the yeah. roast of Giroux and then bring it all up. That yes. would be great. That so if, be. Everybody listening, if there's ever a Claude Giroux roast, you will get the story first and buy your tickets.
And it's, and again, it's nothing even that bad. It's just kind of funny the way it ended up happening. But anyway,
good stuff.
Marty, I was thinking, me and Riley were talking, and I was like, you're obviously you're on TV. You're a very good talker and you know the game real well. You played a long time, but we were kidding around about every time we had practice. And if say there was a workout, kind of goes back to your tape and your gear. Marty never seemed to make it upstairs for those workouts. One, because he had every media person around him. You were best buddies with him, which was smart. So smart.
Yes. Yeah.
They ate out of the palm of your hands. Dude, you could have let 12 in, and the next day the article would have been like, Biron needs help. These guys left him hanging. You know, like, but it was so funny. It took you so long to get that damn tape off. Boys were already showering and leaving. You're still getting the tape off your ankles.
And looking back, I'll be honest with you. Like, I tell my kid all the time, like, dude, you got to get in the gym. It's not about getting strong, but it's like and bulking up. It's about getting lean and getting flexible and do yoga and all of that. And I was so stubborn about it that, like, if you actually reminded me that the weight room was upstairs at the skate zone, because I never was there. Never. I never went upstairs. Yeah. I literally went from the showers in the lounge to Reggie Lemlin's office, our goalie coach at the time, to do a little video or whatever, and back to the locker room. That was my area. Everything else around this was foreign. I never went anywhere else. You know, for me, and I was meticulous with my equipment. Some would call me high maintenance. And in the text that you sent me this morning, Nasty, you said you aim high maintenance, you know what? And I was like, no. I'm meticulous. So I like to spend time with my gear. Like when guys are working out, whatever, I'm there looking at my pads and my gloves. And if there's a strap that needed a little stitching or a little fixing, the skates, the mask and all that, I spend the time on my equipment. Now, I almost wish somebody would have, you know, taken my gear away and said, no, you're not spending time on this. That's our job and you do your thing. But you guys kind of let me do whatever I needed to do.
Well,
so I was high maintenance for the equipment guy, but I was very low maintenance when it came to the athletic guys, the medical guys, because I was never injured. I was never in there for massages. I was never in there for treatments, and I wasn't in the gym. So they never saw me. They're like, who's this guy walking around? Basically, they didn't know it was me.
Who's that monster walking up down the hallway?
I know exactly.
165. No, but you know what, Marty? I wasn't making fun of the fact you didn't go up there, because you had a great career and what you did worked. So,
well, and you know, now looking back, and especially maybe the transition was different. Like Marty Brodeur never worked out, right? He just did his thing.
Yeah.
And you go back to one off season, he ripped a bicep and missed the whole year. Exactly. Like I played with Dominic Hasek. The guy like was flexible, was a freak of nature. He never really worked out. Once a month, he would go in the gym and he'd literally hit every machine in the gym. He'd do the chest pump, then he'd do the shoulder pull down, then he'd do the legs where you kick him out and the hamstring. He'd do every machine in a row once a month. He'd be like, good workout today, boys. And then he'd leave, right? And so for me, that was almost my mentality. Like those top goaltenders, they work at their game and their crafts and their equipment and all that. And the gym is for the players. Now it's completely different. I mean, seriously, look at these athletes, like these goaltenders, the Vasilevskis and those guys. They're freaks. They're freaks of nature. They're unbelievable. So it changed in my time. But the guys before me, and maybe I had a little bit of an old school mentality with that. Like I never saw the gym, and I did in the summer, you know, just to keep myself in shape. But during the season, I felt like I needed to just focus on my game and play my games. And then the gym was like something I didn't need to do. And it was wrong, but it worked.
Well, really, you're right, though. That's a great point about how the game changed, because so many aspects of it have changed. And we talk about that a lot. And you're right. There weren't going up in there and doing all that stuff. You're right. So, I mean,
well, that game's changed in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
When I started, there'd be a case of 24 beers in the back of the bus after a game on the road on the way to the airport. And there'd be like 20 guys having a beer and four guys having two, right? That was 24 beers gone like this. And then I remember at the end of my career, I'm with the Rangers and I'm the backup goalie. So I'm like, I'm going to do all these things. In Montreal, I ordered the dogs, you know, for the game. And, you know, wherever we were, I'd get the beers. And first time I put like 24 on the bus and I walked home with a case of 24 beers, literally like still in there. They're all doing their recovery shakes. So by the end of it, I'd literally have a four pack on ice in the back of the bus and I'd have one. And I would put three in my bag and be going home with them. Like that's nobody did that. Like it changed. It's totally changed. That's just recovery shakes and you know all of that. Like whatever happened to sitting having a beer, right? It's not what it is. It's completely different.
We've talked to a couple guys too, JVR recently, and several others about like the evolution of training. To your point. You know, the heavy lifting back in that era, I remember like the squat racks, the bench press. Yeah. I know you were a heavy bencher back in the day, Marty. You know,
135 about six or seven times. Yes.
Hey, that's impressive. If you can do that, that's good.
You know, to now, it's like guys don't even lift weights. It's all band work and plyos. And again, it's all recovery, it's all maintenance and just that longevity, right? It's just there's so much. I see science to validate this stuff. It's just it's actually amazing because it's really what it's all about, right? I mean, it's just about self-preservation and you know being able to stay functional and lengthen your career, not just the here and now and you know pushing some weight around and looking big in a shirt.
I remember our testing in training camp? Like I remember like Johnny Stevens had us do the 3-mile run. I'm like, what is a 3-mile run gonna do for me in the crease? Like I ran it. I got lapped twice by Braden Colbert.
Oh,
that one year. We started calling him Seabiscuit because the guy was running so fast on the track, right? Like, and I remember the second year we went down to a 2-mile run, which was a little bit better. And by the time I got to the Rangers and John Tortorella was doing the same thing, we had to run 2 miles or whatever. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to ride the bike. I'm like, I'm 35 years old right now. I don't need to go out and do 2-3 mile runs in training camp. Like I know what I should do. And so I just ride the bike and kind of watch him run around. But Torts wasn't really happy about that, but we had a good relationship, so we were okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing we talked about, Marty. Like, just remember back in the day, the guys just pounding their knees, their joints on the pavement, running.
Just silly. Like,
just think about it. It's asinine, really. I mean, but that's what you did. I remember videos my dad used to show me of the team, like, back in the 80s, and they're running on the same thing. They're doing all these runs, and, I mean, I guess that's just what you thought you did, you know.
Yeah, the difference is in the 80s, they'd run, then they'd go back to the locker room, fire up a couple darts, and crack open a cold one, right?
That's exactly.
So at least I feel like I didn't do that. I didn't like fire up a couple of players light after the game, after the practice. So at least I was doing something healthy.
Yeah,
that's you right. know, so that was good.
Billy Barber and Bob Clark said that, you know, when they were going to camp, they were going to camp to get in shape because they didn't do a damn thing all summer. Now, as a player, it's a 12-month a year deal for the most part. Like, especially like Riley said, maybe you take some time off, but the maintenance is probably something you still have to do, the stretching. JVR is really, really big into that. And it's like Riley said to him the other day, he's getting better. Like he's, you know, he had one of his best years this year, number wise. Tailed off a little at the end, but the team tailed off at the end. You know, they started struggling.
Yeah, but individually, you could see. Like, look at Marc-Andre Fleury. The guy's getting older and getting better. Yeah. And I used to think, like, when he was younger, like, he did all of these things. Like, he took care of himself. He was, like, not an ounce of fat, and he was flexible. He'd be on the ice doing the splits, and I'd be like, what, showing off? You're doing the splits? Yeah. Like my body, like, it's like, I can't go farther than this. But you now know, you're like, well, there's a reason why he's in the league so long and playing at such a high level is because he took care of himself, took care of his body, and prepared in such way physically. You know, some guys mentally, they can do it. Some guys physically, they can do it. He has both, but that's why he's still around.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Sure, man. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he's still playing at a high, high level, man.
Just can't play against the Flyers, but that's okay.
Yeah.
had a few battles that way, but
yeah. One thing I wanted to bring up just because I thought it was one of the funniest things ever. I don't know if you may remember this, Marty. So you had played with Eric Bolton, really tough guy, and Buff. And Riles, I think you and I talked about this a while back, but one of the funniest things is so Marty's out there. It's a morning skate in Atlanta. We're playing Atlanta. And Bolton happened to be like leaned up on the wall there. They're doing drills and you're talking to him and me and Riley come walking out and Riles just kind of like looking over your shoulder and Marty says, "Hey Bolts, gonna fight this guy later tonight?" And Riles is like just standing there like and then Bolts looks at you and goes, "Huh, I don't want to fight anybody if I don't have to." You know what I mean? And Riley's like, "Why the fuck do you say that, man?" Like, at this point in time, it was so funny. And Marty said, "Oh, yeah, you guys are going to go."
I'm like, well, okay. So when I came to Buffalo, their athletic trainer was Jim Pizzatelli. Yes. And Pizza used to do that every morning. Why? Because he had Rob Ray and he had Bobby Bugner and then he had Matt Barnaby and he had all these tough guys, right? He always
Brad May.
So he would literally set up fights in the morning. He'd go up to the trainer of the other team and be like, "Oh yeah, who do you want? Razor's gonna fight this guy, and then Mayday's gonna fight this guy." And he was like setting it up. Like it was fight night and he would set it up.
Riley, he's not lying.
This I believe it. I believe it.
So I would like kind of like almost have that mentality. Like it was like, let's set up tonight's action. Let's go. Hey, Bolts, I still see our boys play together. So Bolts and I see each other all the time. And he says that sometimes he'd be like, "Why did you tell Eric Kearns I wanted to fight him?" I'm like, because. Like, because I'm not going to do it. I want to be entertained. Let's go. So you used to tell me the same thing. So that's funny that you guys said that. And most likely because we were in Atlanta, I wasn't playing because I absolutely sucked in Atlanta. And Nitty Mackey was always great in Atlanta.
He was so good against Lettinen. I don't think he ever lost a game against that guy.
He never let Kovalchuk score. I remember this one game, like Kovalchuk in the last minute probably had 10 shots on goal, 5 of them one-timer, and he stopped them all. Yeah. Like, he was always so good. So I was always sitting on the bench in Atlanta, and it's boring because there's 5,000 people. I'm like, I need entertainment. So Riles and Bolts, you guys are going to provide me my entertainment for the night. So I appreciate that. Sorry I put you in that spot.
No, it's all good. I know Bolts he was kind of tailing towards the end of his career there, and he probably won nothing. You want to muck it up, and I was, you know, in Atlanta there, just like, you know, the vibe was a little bit low, and I was like, I don't really want to do it. But then you teed it up, so then I had to get after it.
Riles, Marty's bringing up Jim Pizzatella. He was a medical guy there forever. He's the one that saved Clint Malarchuk.
Oh yeah,
when he got So anyway, I meet Pizza. I had met him when I was a little bit younger with my dad. But my first year in Florida, Buffalo comes in, and like he said, they had a tough team. And Marty, you weren't pro yet because this was 93, 94. Yeah. It was Florida's first season. So go through the practice. I'm doing their laundry, and I go into the Panthers locker room, which was very small in the Miami Arena, and it was fairly close to where the visitors were. So I can hear Michael Jackson music just blaring. You know where I'm going, buddy.
Yep.
So, and this is the true story, guys. So I'm like, where's that Michael Jackson music coming from? So I start walking down the hallway, and as I get closer, I'm like, it's coming out of the Buffalo's locker room. So I go walking in, and I thought everyone had left, right? Because ripping those guys went to eat. You know, they weren't missing lunch.
Yeah. Well,
it's pizza, guys. If you're listening to this on Apple, not watching on YouTube, you can't see what I'm doing, but he's walking around the room doing this, like Michael Jackson, got the hand going. And I walk in and I'm like, this can't be real. Like, I'm like kind of looking around, see if someone's video, you know, and I'm like, hey, and he's like, "Yo, what's up?" And he like does a little shimmy. And I'm like, this is the medical guy for Buffalo, right? And I'm like, "You like Michael Jackson?" He goes, "That's my boy. That's my boy." And, you know, Pizza had an earring, too. He had an earring. And I'm like, "I love Michael Jackson." I said, "I can dance like him." And he's like, "All right, let's go dance off right now." Me and Pizza had a dance off
in the middle of
the locker. Oh, yeah. I was doing my Michael. He was doing his. It was great. And he loved me ever since. Like, we were, like, every time I saw him, like, he's hugging me, talk to him. But a little bit later, he says, who do you guys got down there? Who's tough? And I said, well, I guess, you know, we have Brent Severin, and Paul Laws is probably the toughest guy, you know, he's a D man. And he says, oh yeah. He goes, you think you could take Brad May? And now this is my first year. I don't really know Brad May. I knew who he was, but I didn't know enough about it. And I'm like, yeah, I think he could, you know, I'm just, you know, Panthers are my team. What am I going to say? No, this motherfucker, all the boys come in and they're all changed. They're in their underwear. And I come in, I'm like, you know, getting water bottles. I'm trying to set the bench up. I come back in and he goes, hey, Sudsy. Cause they all called me Sudsy because of my dad. I didn't have the nickname Nasty yet. And, he's like, Sudsy, come here for a minute. And he's got Razor in there. Brad May. I don't know who else you guys had, who Buffalo had, but he's got Brad May standing there. And he goes, hey, didn't you say, tell Brad what you said? And I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, what? You know, like, I'm a kid, man. I'm like 22, you know, it's my first few weeks in the league. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, Brad May looks at me. He goes, did you say Paul Laws could take me? And I'm like, I did. You know, what was I going to say? Like, I was like, I did. And I'm like, is this guy going to punch me in the fucking face? Because I don't know, you know? And he goes, he's like, I just messed with you, man. He goes, tell him we'll go. Tell him we'll go. We'll see. And I'm like, I'm not telling him that. Like, I'm not telling him anything. But Pete's, I'm like, you motherfucker. But he set fights up all the time. He was trying to set them up all the time.
You guys know how the trainers and the medical guys, like, they're the life. Like, they keep the team together, right? Yeah. So, in different ways. Like in Philly, like when we needed a big win, you knew Rock was coming in with the Back in Black AC/DC CDs, and he would stop whatever club gaggy we had going on because Simon Gagné was in charge of music, and it was like techno, like club music. He would stop it, and he'd put the Back in Black CD, and he'd press play, and he'd blow the speakers right out, right? Oh, like it was like so loud the building could shake. Well, Pizza was like that, but he had a crystal ball in the medical room. And when he wanted the guys to be fired up, he'd turn all the lights off. He had a spotlight on the crystal ball, and it would sparkle all around the room, and he'd turn to Michael Jackson. And he was by himself. At the time, it wasn't like five or six medical guy. It was one. So he'd be doing like treatments and massage, and then he'd tape an ankle, but he'd be dancing through the whole thing. Like that was his thing. Like we used to hang out in the room just to watch him go.
Just to watch
The trainers and the equipment guys, like they keep the team together. They glue it together.
Oh,
that's why I loved you guys all so much. From Cass and Rammer in New York to you and Bricks and Jimmy in Philly to Bogsy in Long Island with the Islanders to George and Rip and those guys in Buffalo. Like you guys were almost my best friends. Like it was you guys kept it going.
Yeah, it's fun, man. That's the part I miss. I miss that the most, just being around the boys and the fun shit like that. That's you never forget it. That's for sure. A lot of fun.
Yeah,
Pizza used to make those. Sorry, Rouse. Pizza used to make the robes too.
Started in Rochester. Pizza was the trainer, the medical guy from Mike Keenan with the Rochester Americans. And he had a guy named Val James. And Val James was about as tough as nail. He's the first African-American to play in the National Hockey League. Like, we all know that he was the first American black hockey player, basically. There was a few Canadians, but now he was the first American one. But Val James, so in Rochester, they used to pull the bus. The visiting bus would come in through a door. And they had to go down in the basement to the locker room at the old War Memorial. So what they would do, when they could see the bus coming around the corner, they'd put up the stick table right there. Val James would come out in his robe, his boxer's robe, with a cigarette. He had a dart in his mouth, and he had the saw in his hand and a stick on the table, and he'd be cutting a stick. And all these 22-year-old kids, like just fresh off the farm, would be coming in, right? And they'd see Val James cutting sticks with a dart in his mouth, and they'd be like running down the stairs to like get out. Like they'd be petrified. So that's what Pizza used to do, and you know those types of games. That was great.
Oh, that's classic. That'd be terrifying to walk into a building and see that as a fresh off the farm young buck. I was gonna ask you, Marty. There's a rule I read about that was introduced with your name, the Biron rule.
Yeah.
What is up with that?
So I in 90. Oh, I'm trying to think of the year 93-94. I played midget way up north in the province of Quebec, and their numbers were a little wacky. They didn't have the regular numbers. They had eye numbers in the 80s and 90s, and one of the goalie number was 00. So they're like, here you go. And they gave me like 00 for the goal, for the goalie, my number. And I had a great year. I had a great year. I had goalie of the year that year as a 16-year-old, and then got drafted in the first round in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. So then I go to Beauport in the queue, and the trainer gives me the numbers 00. So I'm like, this is great. Like, I love that number. I had a great year. Great year, my first year in juniors. I get, drafted first round in Buffalo. And then the next season at Christmas, I'm 18 years old. I get called up to Buffalo. All the goalies in Buffalo are injured. I come to Buffalo. Again, Pizza, Jim Pizzatelli. He has a number made up and a jersey made up in my stall at the Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh, and it's got 00. So I got to wear 00, right? And I thought it was so cool. Now, I got lit up that night by Jagr and all those guys. But still, like, I was 18 years old and I was living the dream, right? I got to play three quarter of a period at the Montreal Forum that year before they closed down the Forum. And I was with Buffalo for 3 weeks.
Rocking zeros.
Rocking zeros, 00. Cool. And so that... The next year, I didn't get called up. And then the next year, I turned pro. And it's 98-99. And in Rochester, Pete Rogers, who's now the equipment guy in Nashville, is, you're not wearing 00. I'm like, oh, Pete. He goes, you're a rookie. You get the number you get. And number one is the number you're getting. So that year, I had number one. The next season, 99-2000, they send a memo out saying, numbers have to be between 1 and 98. Wayne had just retired, or I think he was about to retire, but they said 1 and 98, that's it. It was basically the Y2K bug. Like, they were worried about computers and their programs crashing, and when they put 00 as my number, it didn't register. So no for way. My pension and my games played and all of that, it didn't register. And instead of fixing the computer program, they said, well, let's tell the kid he's not allowed to wear that number anymore. So I had to switch. So that's the Buron rule, was that's that crazy. Nobody was allowed to wear 00 or 0 as a number. And so I changed to 43 just because my brother was wearing 34 in juniors, and it was 34 was taken, but flipped the numbers over, whatever.
Yeah.
And I had a great year in Rochester that year. So I'm like, well, that's my number now. Like, if I would have sucked in Rochester and said, get that number off my back, maybe I would have fought it, right? Maybe I would have said, I want my 00 back.
Yeah.
But 43 worked. And so I kept 43, and luckily I got to wear it everywhere I went. It wasn't a popular number. I got to Philly, there was no 43. I got to Long Island, there was no 43. Rangers, there was no 43. So I got to wear it everywhere.
Wow, that's incredible.
So basically, you and Gretz are the only two guys that, your numbers basically are retired forever. I mean, I know you're a pretty humble guy. You don't want to say it, but that's really what it comes down to.
We're basically, Wayne and I are best friends. Let's just put it that way.
I figured that.
Or we should be. We should be, just because of that.
I think he needs to be made aware of the fact that it's just you and him that have their
that's impressive.
Their numbers, their numbers retired throughout the whole NHL. It's the way it is. I don't know that my numbers retired. It just nobody can wear it.
Nobody can wear it. So
there's a difference between the two of them.
Yeah, right.
That's the truth, man.
Right on, Marty. Well, I know you got to get rocking here. You got a big NHL Tonight show or NHL Network.
Yeah, I got a few. See, that's what's fun is that being in the media, I'll tell you this. If I was not in the media, I probably wouldn't have been able to kept in touch with so many of my former teammates or guys I played against. And that's the part that I love so much. So today we're getting ready. So what are we today? Wednesday. Getting ready to jump on NHL Network Radio. For 3 hours of radio. So during that time, we're going to get Brian Boucher on. We're going to get Mike Rupp on. We're going to get Anthony Stewart. Who else we're getting? Mark Denny. So there are people I know. I'm like, but I know them. Why? Because the business, right? Like I see Boucher and I see Rupper and those guys. And we talk about, when I see Rupper, I always talk about his Jagr salute when I was with the Rangers and we played the Winter Classic in Philly. And we laugh about that stuff, but the media side has kept me in touch with so many people that's what is so good about it. Yeah. I don't know that I would have been able to, or as a goalie, you're kind of separate from the rest a little bit. Like you play with, like, Rouse, you're on the line with a couple of guys, and you know, you kind of keep in touch with them, or you play against them, you always talk to them. As a goalie, you don't have that relationship with the guys the same way, but you still want to be a part of what's going on. So the media side kind of allows me to do that. It's really, really cool for that.
That's cool.
That is awesome. Marty, before I forget, I wrote this down because I wanted to ask you, the last game you played, I was shocked when you retired, like in the season. Was your last game in San Jose?
No, it was my second last game. So it's funny because that year, you know, like the family was in Buffalo. I was going back to New York, and my daughter Emily was my third kid, was starting kindergarten, and her and I are pretty tight. And it was hard to put her on the bus that day and then drive to New York for camp, right? Like our first day of kindergarten, they're like, "Hey, honey, have fun at school. I won't be here when you return," right? Basically is what. And I drove to New York for camp. Camp was long. She was struggling the adjustment with school. I felt really guilty about it. And we started the season, and it was basically going to be my last year. It was going to be my last season because my contract was up. I was 36 years old. I'm like, you know what? Like, probably going to just make it my last year. And we go out west, and we played LA, we played Arizona, and then we go into San Jose. I haven't played yet that year. Right. I haven't played a game yet. And Hank gets pulled. I go in, and all of a sudden the Sharks are just feasting. It's like a massive feast from the San Jose Sharks.
That's part of the reason I was going to ask you, did you just shut down because Thomas Hurdle scored the goal through his leg?
No, I'll tell you this. I was mentally probably shutting down as it all happened. And then this Hurdle goal happened. And I really, to be honest with you, what I said to myself after is like, just make the damn save. Like, really, it's not a hard save to make. Like, I was almost in the back of the net by the time he, like, put it through his legs. Like, I look at it, I'm like, I was a Pee Wee C goalie, like, playing in the National Hockey League. Like, I just, my body, my mind was not in the game at all. Right. So then the next day, we have a morning skate in Anaheim. And I remember Alain Vigneault, who's the coach now in Philly. And he's, like, comes over to me and he goes, "That was rough. That was really rough the other night." And I talked to Glenn Sater, and he goes, "If that happens again and you're not prepared to play at any moment, doesn't matter if you're starting or not, like, you're being sent down." And I'm like, Alain, come on. I knew him. I'm like, it was a tough situation. You know, it's hard for me right now. I'm going to put myself in it. I'm going to give you everything I got. So he goes, "Okay, good. You're going to start in St. Louis, not the next game, the game after." So we play Anaheim. Get lit up in Anaheim again. Like, we had a tough start this season. And then we go to St. Louis and I start the game. And again, like, pucks are just going in left and right. Like, I remember, was it Perron took a wrist shot really from the blue line entering the zone, and he beat me on the blocker side. I got pulled after the second period. And I remember after the game, we had a day off the next day. I flew to Buffalo. My parents were in town watching the kids. Sat down with my dad. I said, I'm not feeling it, Dad. Like, I think I'm done. And he goes, "Son, you know it. Like, if in your heart you're done, you've never been done. You've been playing hockey since the time you're 5 years old. You're 36 years old. You've always loved it. But if you're telling me you're done right now, then you're done." You know? And I said, "You know what? But for myself, I got to give me myself like one more kick at it. So I'm going to go back to New York. I'm going to practice tomorrow, and I'll see how I feel after it." And the first 5 minutes, I was like, "I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good." And then all of a sudden, I was like, "I'm faking it. I'm faking it. I'm not feeling good. I love the game of hockey, but I hate this right now." Yeah. And I walked out and I went to Glenn and Alain. I said, "I need to go home and really think this through. But chances are, I'm done." And he said, "Okay, go home. Take the time you want." Went home a couple of days later. I called him. I said, "I'm retiring," and I made the call. So it wasn't the Hurdle goal, and it wasn't the game. No, because it was funny. Saturday night, the next Saturday night, I'm watching Hockey Night in Canada, right? I'm like at home watching Hockey Night in Canada. Don Cherry comes on. And he goes, Oh, you know what? That's bullshit. Like, that hurt old kid. He put Marty Biron in retirement for doing this. He should beat him up. He should beat that hurt old kid up. Like, he didn't like the showboating aspect of it.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, oh, no, I didn't retire because of it. Like, I love this stuff. I love that, you know, Merrick Malik put it through his leg and hurt old net. All the kids are doing it now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that. That summer going into camp, my mind, body, soul wasn't in it.
Yeah.
And my mind, body, soul was into doing something else. And I jumped right into the media and doing some on-ice goalie coaching. And I loved it. And that's what I did. And I think I can do it for the next 30 years. I really, really love it that much. That's
beauty. Awesome. Yeah, man. Awesome. Follow your heart. It's good. It's good insight. Man. It's good
But
advice,
if you see Hurdle, if you see Hurdle anywhere, punch him for me. Like, I guess
I'm surprised you didn't get it. If you knew you were almost there, you should have just too.
I signed a stick. Later that season, I was covering the Rangers with MSG, and Cass, the equipment guy in New York, he goes, Marty, can you sign a stick? And I'm like, sure, I sign a stick. And then San Jose's in town, and the boys from San Jose, I don't remember, I think it was Thornton or Marlowe, they're like, hey, that's all, it's pretty cool, you gave the kid a stick. And I'm like, what stick? I didn't give a kid any stick. He goes, oh, Hurdle got one of your signed stick. And I'm like, Cass, you didn't tell me what that was for, right? You just said sign here. But I kind of think that's cool, right? Like, the kid is a pretty good hockey player.
Yeah,
and he scored a pretty big goal. And he's like, here you go, get a stick. So that's cool.
Did he have he had a hat trick that night?
He had four.
He had four, yeah.
That was the fourth one.
That was the fourth one.
And he never played after that.
Yeah, the other ones were too easy. Let me try something harder.
Yeah, let me try a little tougher. He didn't play after that. The boys from San Jose, they're like, boys, he's not going to see the ice after. That's not going to happen. Because it was still a little bit of that old school back then. Like, our boys in New York were like, put him on the ice so we can kick his ass, right?
Yeah.
But no, they kept him on the bench. So.
Smart.
Yeah, he has turned into a pretty big. He's a big kid. God, he's a big boy.
Yeah. But, just like me, about 205.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Big guy. Yeah. I can tell your traps. You're like, I can tell you.
Oh, right. I filled right out.
I took a picture with Danny V to the golf tournament Monday.
Yeah.
And in the picture, you can steal a little bit of my man boob. I'm like, I better get some workout going. So
push-ups, Marty Mar. Push-ups. That's all.
Yes.
Body weight.
I got to eat the kale and the seeds and the berries like Riles
just
does.
Just go out back.
Just go out back. It's all growing in your backyard there, man.
Mushrooms.
Absolutely. that's awesome, guys. Oh, thanks a lot for having me. That's great. I got to run to do the radio. But listen, next year or whatever, we got plenty more stories. We just scratched the surface. Yeah. Like, we got more. So we'll have to do it again at some other point. And let's make this happening again at some point down the future.
For sure,
let's
man.
Do it.
We really do appreciate your time, brother.
Yeah, great seeing you, brother.
That's awesome. Thanks, guys.
All right, take care, man.
That episode was brought to you by Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. For all your hockey needs and the best grind in town, visit Nasty at SettlemyerSkateSharpening.com. Howie's got the steel.
Howie's got it, baby.
And Body Check Wellness for your premium hemp-derived CBD and functional mushrooms. Check out BodyCheckWellness.com. And thanks to our awesome guests, Marty Mar, Marty Biron, for hopping on with us. Great to see Marty.
And
he hasn't changed one bit.
He can
hold a conversation like the best of them.
we got to just let him talk.
We didn't need
us. That's Marty. That's what I love about it, man. We have to have him in studio still.
Definitely.
There's so much more. That's what he was saying. You know, we just scratched the surface. There's so many good stories while he was here. And, he was such a fun guy to be around, man. He's one of those dudes. I mean, you can tell by him talking to us. He's just happy, man. He's always happy. He's just fun to be around. Makes you feel good. Great guy, man. Love it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think more people need to kind of follow the way he lives and you know, how he is, because, you know, he there's no bad days for Marty Mara. You know, I don't remember him having a bad day. Even if he's frustrated, he surely don't show it. And just the positive human, really. I mean, to have the media eating out of his hand like that and keeping a positive face, being a goaltender in a big market like Philly, probably not an easy thing to do, but he somehow found a way to keep it loose and fun. So props to him.
He did, man. He was He did have them eating out of the palm of his hands. It was great. He never played a bad game in Philly, you know, no. Like he never did in the papers or anything,
no.
Which is great. He was awesome. He did a great job while he was here, man. He really did.
Yeah.
You know, we went to the conference finals and all that stuff like we talked about. So he played well for us.
Yeah, he did.
Good guy. Good teammate. Obviously, if he's willing to go fight Ray Emery, the late great. I still think there's something wrong with even thinking about doing that, but
being 165 pounds soaking wet and tackling the heavyweight champ of the goaltending in the league.
Oh my God. And you know what? You could have probably put Ray in with the tough guys.
Oh yeah. Legit.
We're just players. Like obviously he had the big chest protector on and all that. I mean, we saw the fight with him and Josh Gratton and they're just throwing toe to toe and Ray's like smiling.
Oh yeah,
I'm like, loved it. And he was smiling. Poor Marty, he's just like, woo.
Yeah.
Hey, Petey, come on over.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's smiling. You know, Marty Petey after too.
Yeah, fuck, guy was awesome, man. He was awesome. Yeah. But anyway, Marty's great, man. It was so nice to have him on.
Yeah, for sure. And he's found his niche in the media world. I mean, that's exactly where he belongs. He
surprise.
Yeah, right.
You know,
shocker to the world. Yeah, right?
I can't believe he talks so much.
Yeah.
No, he can hold his own show just by himself. He could do a gate. He doesn't need a color guy. He doesn't need anyone. He just do it.
Yeah.
But he's good at it. He does a really good job.
Yeah.
Actually. So
yeah, he keeps it real. He's got some good stories. He makes fun of himself. He's honest.
Yeah.
You know, he's seen the game evolve and we talked about that. So it's good to see him, you know, to have a success in it, in his post career and really find his groove. Cause obviously, I mean, talking is
bread
and butter, so
it sure is
a lot, right?
It sure is. He's really good at that, but he knows what he's talking about too, though. It's not like he's just running his mouth. He's
exactly,
you know, he does a really good job. So
I agree.
Props to him and appreciate him coming on with us, man. It was
great to reconnect. All right, Nast. Well, that wraps up episode 31 with Marty Marr, Marty Biron. Be sure to tune in next week for episode 32. Have a great week, knuckleheads, and stay safe.
See you, knuckleheads.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.